There you go. I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk about something special. You guys all know what was special about today, right?
It was Ben Gurion declared the state of Israel. Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. It was awesome. There's actually a historical event that goes a little bit further back in history. It's called Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is the second Pesach. And I'm sure you've all heard about it and maybe even shared some insights.
Yeah, we did hear about it, yeah.
But it's something every year that astounds me. It really does. I try to picture the following scene. Imagine, maybe you've had the experience, because I know I have, a situation of where you have some obligation for something. I don't know whether it's a report that was due or something at work that's, you know, you're required, you're obligated to take care of. Even if it's something you enjoy and you're not looking to get out of it. And then all of a sudden, the boss or someone comes to you and says, you know what? I'll take it off of your plate. We'll let somebody else do it. Don't worry about it. I don't know about you, but for me, I would scream, Baruch Hashem, thank God, it's off of my plate. I have full exemption. I don't have to worry about it. Even though I enjoy it, whatever, but you know what? I got enough going on. Which boggles my mind. Because listen to the story, how the Torah introduces this festival. The Torah says like this. There were some men who were unclean. They were tamei. They were impure by reason of coming in contact with a mate, with a corpse, and could not offer. Well, Justin's coming in here. Sorry. One second. And they were unable to bring the Korban Pesach on the day it was supposed to be brought. Appearing that same day before Moshe and Aaron, the men turned and said to them, even though we were unclean by reason of coming in contact with the corpse, why must we be left out from presenting Hashem's offering at its set time together with the rest of the Jewish people? Why should we lose out? Now, again, take a step back. There is a mitzvah in the Torah that on the 14th day of Nisan, there is a biblical commandment to bring the Korban Pesach, to bring the Pesach offering. You're supposed to shecht it, and then the night of Pesach, the night of the Seder, you're supposed to eat it. These fellows were tamei. These fellows were impure. They were ritually impure, and they were exempt. The Torah itself, the same Torah that says you are obligated to bring the Korban, also is the same Torah that says that if you're tamei for a good reason, you don't have to bring it. And yet they come crying to Moshe and to Aaron and they say, why should we miss out? Why should we lose out? We wanted to bring it too. In my eighth grade, we had a similar situation. It was not a Korban Pesach, but there was an obligation. And the minute the Rebbe said, don't worry about it, we were out the door like a bunch of you-know-what, going out onto the baseball field and spending the rest of the day playing softball. We didn't even turn back to see if Rebbe was joining us. It didn't matter. We got the thumbs up. We got the exemption. We're out of there. Nobody was knocking and saying, oh, but Rebbe, I so much wanted to learn all the laws of Shabbat. I'm going to be heartbroken if today I'm unable to study that. Hi, Rebbe, what am I going to do? Nobody even batted an eyelash. We were out of there faster than you know what. So why is it this strange request that Hashem established the rules for bringing the Korban Pesach, including the law that somebody who's tamei does not have to do it? Especially they were blameless. How did they become tamei, Jeff? What made them tamei?
Touching a corpse.
Well, what corpse? I mean, come on. Like
this bury. They had to bury somebody that day.
Does he have a name?
I don't know that.
You obviously haven't finished studying all your Talmud yet.
Yosef.
Little
baby. Good. So Eric's already finished Shas. He's already finished the Talmud. We had the Siyum HaShas a few years back. Eric was front and center, right next to Jay. And the Talmud in Sukkah says, it was taught in a Braita. There were certain men who were impure. Why? Who were they? The Brayta answers, they were the bearers of Yosef's coffin, which the Jewish people, we know, brought out of Egypt. That was the promise Yosef made them make. And when it was time to leave the Exodus, we left, we took Yosef's aron, we took Joseph's coffin. These men were in charge of it. And therefore, when you're carrying the coffin, you become tameh, no different than when we go to a cemetery. You're in close proximity to a corpse, you become tameh. But this was a mitzvah. They were obligated to take Yosef's bones, to take the corpse out with them. They're blameless. So who would have complained to say, oh, well, the same God who said they should do the mitzvah of Karban Pesach said this year, okay, they didn't have to. So question number one is, what were they so up in arms about? And why is the Torah teaching us this, what seems to be a really important lesson? But more importantly, along the same lines is a second question. If you read through in the beginning, when Hashem lays out in the Torah the laws regarding Karban Pesach, he makes no mention of this one rule, that if you were tameh or on the road out of your control and you couldn't get to bring the Karban Pesach in time, then you have the opportunity the next month on the 14th of Iyar to bring what we now call Pesach Sheni. God makes no mention of that until after the story. Think about it. He's laying out all the laws regarding bringing the Karban Pesach. It would seem to me very obvious that it goes through, here's what you need to do. You need to bring it at such and such an hour, and you need to have it together with your neighbors, and you have to blah, 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 and it has to be roasted, and it goes through all the details. It should end with a law that says that if, however, you were tamei out of your control because you were dealing with a mitzvah, dealing with somebody who died, or you have an obligation to deal with the corpse, or you're on the road and you have all the laws that are pertaining to, if you can't do it, then you can bring it the following month. There's no mention of that in the laws. Only after this story, when the people came to Moshe and Aaron and complained, why should we lose out? Then Hashem comes to Moshe and says, oh, I'm so glad you asked. Here's what you got to do. That next month on the 14th of Iyar, you'll bring the carbon and yada, 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 yada. Why didn't Hashem teach those laws of the second Pesach immediately when he taught all the other laws regarding Pesach? Why only in response to the incident and the request? These are the two questions that I want to use. They're not, mind-blowing questions, but it's enough to beg the questions to give us an answer that I think is something that we can really, really appreciate. I'm going to throw it out to you. What would you say with these two questions? Irv, what do you say? What do you think? I mean, it's a fair question. These are fair questions, aren't they?
I can't imagine how you feel. I'm tired and I've had it.
What do you think? I can't hear you. You got nothing to say. Okay, fine. Be that way. What do you say? Come on, somebody, Brad, help me out here.
I'm listening.
I'm glad. Okay, fine. You get credit. Attendance.
The Karbanos Pesachim you're talking about? Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was in this week's Parsha.
No. But today is Pesach Sheni. Sunday today was Pesach Sheni, which is the story in the Torah regarding the guys who were tamei who couldn't bring the carbon back, back in Nisan. They're obligated to now opportunity to bring it in Iyar.
And what Parsha is that?
It's in Parshas Bahaloscha.
So that's that. Now, I thought I was reading something about tamei, like being around corpses in Emor.
Yes, that's true. The Kohanim are not allowed to become tameh to a corpse. That is
but this
true.
Is for everyone.
But this is for everybody, correct? That's right. This is for everybody. Any Jew who was tameh because of they were dealing with a corpse, when it came time for Pesach Rishon, we'll call it the first Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, they have the second chance, so to say, on the 14th of Iyar.
Huh.
That's Pesach Sheni. Because I'm sure you all noticed when you went to shul today that they didn't say Tachnun. I know. You were like, oh, man, what's going on? It's one of those funny things. Okay, so here's what I want you to think about. It's really, I think, a lesson that we can all, no matter where we're holding, something that we can learn from. And that is our approach to doing mitzvot. That's really the issue here. It's perhaps the reason why it was intentionally omitted when Hashem taught the laws of the first Pesach, all the laws about it, why it was skipped at that time was in order to teach just how to view a missed opportunity to do a mitzvah, even when it's not our fault. See, we don't give enough credit to how valuable one single mitzvah that we do really is. We undervalue it. It's a shame. We are holding in our portfolio a penny stock. We think it's just a penny stock. Well, whatever. It's just one mitzvah. I do multiple a day, or hundreds in my year, thousands in my lifetime, whatever, one mitzvah here or there. No, gentlemen. That's not the case at all. The compensation that Hashem provided for those who desired to do more than what was, quote, obligated, was expressing their sincere request. They showed how much they wanted it. They had a legitimate excuse. They had a legitimate exemption. But that was not what they were looking for. They understood that what a mitzvah is isn't just a check mark. Oh, I fulfilled my obligation. What a mitzvah is another point of connection with the Almighty. Every single time I do a mitzvah, every single one, as minor as it may seem, is a massive connection with the Almighty. And that is something that we undervalue. If you truly feel a genuine sadness on missing an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah, God says, then you know what? I'll give you a second chance. I'll give you that opportunity. But you have to show me you miss it. You have to show me that it's something that you desire. I'll give you an example. Let me give you an example. The Talmud says something very interesting. You know, we bemoan the fact nowadays that we say, oh, nowadays we have these challenges and the good old days. Well, to some degree, it's true. It is definitely more challenging as time goes on. However, it is not a new phenomenon. 2,000 plus years ago, the sages of the Talmud bemoaned then-a-days to nowadays. Back then, I'll read you what the Talmud says. This is in Brachot 35b. Brad, I know you'll look it up. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna said, Rabbi Yochanan told the following. He said, oh, come and look and see that the latter generations are not like the earlier ones. See, in the earlier ones, the earlier generations, people would purposely bring their fruits into their courtyards through the main gate. You'll see why in a moment. In order to obligate them in having to take tithes, take off miser, truma and miser. However, the later generations, they purposely brought their fruits through the roof, through the skylight, through a side courtyard, through enclosed courtyards, anything but the main gate. Why? So that they could avoid and be exempt from having to give tithes. It's a general law. We know that whenever in an agricultural society, we had to give a certain percentage. That's what nowadays we call giving miser, taking miser money, right? Tzedakah, we give a 10%, right? That's where the word ma'aser comes from. The word eser. Eser means 10. So ma'aser means from 10, a tenth. That's where the word comes from. So we would give ma'aser. Well, in the old days, it wasn't just money. You had to do it on your crops. Well, at what point in the agricultural cycle do I become obligated to give that? Is it the minute it grows? No. It's after I harvest it? Yes, but no. I have to go through a procedure that when I now take it and put it in my silo, bring it through the gate of the main gate of the place where I'm going to be storing it, that moment it becomes obligated. Now I have to give 10%. Where is this practical? Well, let's say I harvest it and I don't get around to bringing it in, and all of a sudden there's a severe storm and the produce that's out in the field gets destroyed. Do I have to give 10th of what it? No, the answer is no. I didn't become obligated yet. So the earlier generations, they would purposely go through the main gate so that they would have the obligation to give Maaser. The latter generations, the ones who thought they were smarter, they brought it in through the side door. They brought it through the roof. They found other ways to avoid the mitzvah. Because if it comes through the side door, the Torah doesn't obligate you in the Maaser. This is how the Talmud says, okay? And it goes through various examples like this. Can you imagine? This is 2,000 plus years ago. They're bemoaning the fact that people are looking for the shortcut. They're looking for how they can avoid, right? The legal loophole on how I don't have to pay taxes. The legal loophole on how I can avoid having to give Maaser. Well, you know, I put it in a tax deferred, you know. Why? I sold the house and I made a killing on it, but it really went back into the other house. I don't have to give Maaser on that. And all the legal loopholes on how to do this. Imagine if they're complaining and they're bemoaning the fact that nowadays we try to get out of the issue. And oh, the good old days, they were up front. They were strong. They faced their obligation. What are we supposed to say in 2022? Huh? We're in deep, you know what? But this is the difference. A then a days versus a nowadays. They had an attitude of how much do you really want it? See, if you had the chance, Irv, if I told you that there was an uncovered, there's a new volume of Maimonides' Code of Jewish Law that we just found a manuscript. We found it. Somebody went into the Vatican and found an old manuscript of Maimonides that was there. And you know what it says in it there? Amazing. It says that if you keep 150 Shabbatot in a row, you get one free. You can skip the 150 first. That's what, okay. Anybody who's listening to this, please don't hang up yet. It's not true, right? But imagine if you had that, Irv. What would be your feeling? Seriously, be honest. Would you take the 150 first off?
Sure.
I mean, come on. You know, Rabbi Goldstein's going to give you a hard time. Hey, I didn't see you in shul. That was my 150 first, Rabbi. I get the freebie. Nope. You can't give me a hard time. I think many of us would take that opportunity. You know what? I kept kosher for 12 years. The 13th year, you get a freebie. Go for it. Go ahead. All the things you ever wanted to try. This is your chance. You get 3 weeks to do it. Fabulous. We would, many of us would jump at the opportunity because, hey, I'm exempt. There's no punishment. Zero. Skip Yom Kippur this year. You don't have to buy a lulav and esrog. That'll save you a couple $100. Right? Any of us would grab the opportunity, but we would be so wrong in our short-sightedness because mitzvos are not just obligatory. They're not things that we just, I have to do them. And when the opportunity presents itself where I don't have to, I seize the moment. Wrong. That is incorrect. The whole story of Pesach Sheni that we celebrated today was the exact opposite mentality. It was an attitude of, yes, I'm exempt, but why would I want to miss the opportunity for connection to God? Why would I miss an opportunity? I don't want to miss that opportunity to connect with God, to connect with eternity, to connect with something so much greater. Okay. You know, for the short term, I would feel great about it because I didn't have to worry about it. But in the long term, You didn't gain. Allow me the following. The Talmud tells a story. The Talmud says that in the future, when Mashiach will come, the other nations of the world are going to complain. They're going to complain and they say, oh, give us one more chance. Give us one mitzvah. Give us one mitzvah. You'll see, we'll do it. And the Talmud says that Hashem says, okay, fine. I'll give you one mitzvah. The mitzvah of sukkah. I'll give you a mitzvah of sukkah. Go out, build a hut, stay out there for 7 days. Fulfill the mitzvah. So, sure enough, each one goes out. The nations will go out. They're going to build a sukkah. And what does Hashem do? Hashem takes out the boiling hot sun and makes it so unbearingly hot. And what does the Talmud say? I'll read you the words. Kol echad ve'echad miva'et b'sukkato v'yotze. Each one left their sukkah, kicked it on the way out and says, I ain't doing this. And they left. Now, at first glance, you're like, okay, I guess they didn't want the mitzvah. But if you think about it for more than 1 second, you'll ask yourself an obvious question. What do you want from them? Do we have a rule? The rule is, Jeff, that what happens if it's, let's assume, not the first night of Sukkot, it starts raining. Am I obligated to eat out in the sukkah when it's pouring?
No.
No, I'm not. If it's boiling hot, brutal, am I obligated to stay out in the sukkah?
I'd say no.
That is correct. The answer is no. We have a general rule. Kol hamitzta'er patur. Whoever is pained, a physical pain, because it's too cold, it's too hot, it's too rainy, any situation where you wouldn't even stay like that in your own home, you're not obligated to stay in the sukkah. So what kind of test was this? When Hashem took out the boiling hot sun and each nation left the sukkah, they were exempt. Why does that prove that they didn't care or that they didn't appreciate a mitzvah? The same would be true for us as the Jewish people. We would be exempt from being out in the sukkah when it's boiling hot. So what do you want from them? This is what the Gemara itself asks. You know what the Gemara says? I glossed over it very quickly, but did anyone pick up on?
They kicked it on the way out.
They kicked it on the way out. Very good, Jimmy. That's the difference. When we leave the sukkah because it's raining or because it's so hot or so cold, we have our head down. We're like, oh, man, I waited all year for this. Oh, bummer. They kicked it on the way out. Yeah, they were exempt. But when they kicked it, it showed a certain, you know, the whole thing was a rouge. The whole performance of that mitzvah was a fake. It was a farce. If you really wanted the mitzvah, and Hashem says, I'll give you one to show me you want it, you wouldn't kick it on the way out. You would feel depressed. You would feel sad that you're missing the opportunity. That's the difference. A Jew has a desire to fulfill it even when he's exempt. He leaves the sukkah feeling down, feels gloomy, like, ugh, I've waited all year for this. You know who characterized this mentality the best? Was Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu really, really felt this way. And I'll show you why I say that. Who actually took Yosef's coffin out of Egypt? It was Moshe. Moshe himself. The Torah itself says in Shemos, it says, and Moshe took with him the bones of Yosef, who had exacted an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will be sure to take notice of you. Then you shall carry up my bones from there with you, Moshe took the coffin of Yosef. One second. Moshe is from what tribe?
Levi.
He's from Levi. Irvi says it very proudly. He knows that. That's his tribe. Right? You're a Levi, aren't you?
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember. Right? We got a lot of Levis on this call. We got the Hoffman boys. Who else?
Jeff.
Jeff's also a Levi, right? Jimmy's not. David's not. I don't think David. David, are you? Fred's not. Yeah. Plain old Jew like me. I don't know what Justin is.
Israel.
Ami, I know you're plain. You're a plain old Jew like me. But Moshe's from the tribe of Levi, right? It's not his ancestor. Yet the verse applies the concept of Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvot. A truly wise person grabs mitzvos and says the Medrash, you know who's that? Moshe. Because while everybody was involved with collecting all of the loot out of Egypt, everybody's collecting the gold and the silver and all the vessels. What's Moshe doing? Moshe's taking care of Yosef. What do you mean? Moshe's not a descendant of Yosef. Moshe was quite busy at that moment taking responsibility for all the details of the exodus of 3 million people, setting up a system of living, preparing for the receiving of the Torah, and yet he's involved with a mitzvah. The mitzvah of collecting Yosef's bones. It's exactly what Yosef made the Jewish people promise. He understood, Moshe understood the true value of a mitzvah versus material belongings. But wait, you see it even further with Moshe. Let's jump to a little bit later. The Jewish people sin with the golden calf. According to Rashi, the very next day when Moshe comes down and has the tribe of Levi destroyed 3,000 of the Jews that participated in it, the very next day Hashem gives Moshe the commandment to build the Mishkan, to build the tabernacle. It was the very next day. Okay. What happens? Sure enough, they collect it. They get all the materials. They build it, and it's ready to be put up. The Torah tells us that for the first 7 days of part of the inauguration process of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, Moshe was the one who put it up and took it down and put it up and took it down. The Torah says that when it came time for the final putting it up and all the craftsmen were ready to do it, they couldn't do it. None of the workers were able to get it up, even though they designed it. They had it all working. Moshe put it up the days before. Why were they unable to? So Rashi quotes the Gemara. Rashi quotes the Talmud. Shehayah Moshe Meitzar. Moshe was pained. He was really hurt. Al shalon nishtatef, that he physically did not participate in the construction of the Mishkan. It was done by Bezalel and Ahaliyav. Bezalel and Ahaliyav, they were the major craftsmen, the project managers, and all the craftsmen who knew how to work with all the metals. Moshe did not do any of that. And he felt terrible. Lefikach, says the Gemara, therefore, la yachlu lahamido bishvilcha. Hashem says, I'm going to make it that they can't physically put it up and that you'll be able to do it. If I were there, you know what I would have said? Probably I would have been in big trouble, but I would have said, Moshe, take a chill pill. You've done enough. What is it that you're so upset about? Oh, you didn't do this mitzvah. You got a billion mitzvahs going for you already. You were Hashem's right-hand man bringing the plagues in Egypt. You were God's right-hand man to split the sea. You were God's right-hand man to go up and get the Torah. You spoke to God like no human being ever. Okay, so you missed one. So you didn't contribute into the Mishkan. Chill. That's what Tachman would have said. And Tachman would have gotten zapped because it would have been the wrong answer. Why is it that Moshe was so pained? It's because Moshe had the recognition of the value of every single mitzvah. No matter how many you've done, one more is invaluable. And don't underestimate the value of a single mitzvah. If you say, okay, give me something a little bit more that I can relate to. Okay, I'll give you one. We read on Tisha B'Av and we read on Yom Kippur about the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs who, unfortunately, 10 great Jewish scholars and leaders that were brutally murdered during the time of the Romans. Most famously is probably Rabbi Akiva. Okay. However, we read about them in the psalm. I don't call it a psalm. In the lament in Kina, right? In the Kina called Ela Ezkira. These I remember, and it tells the story of how each one was brutally murdered. And it talks about there one of the first ones is a man by the name of Rabbi Yishmael, who was the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yishmael, who was the high priest at the time. The story goes that unfortunately he was taken, and they were, he was a very handsome individual. And the tyrant, this murderer, his daughter liked the beauty of Rabbi Yishmael. So she turned to her father and she said, "He's very handsome." So even if it was only half cruel, that request might have said, okay, we'll spare him. But no, he went even farther in terms of his cruelty. He says, oh, you like his beauty? No problem. We'll preserve it. And they skinned him alive. They peeled his skin from upon him. Yeah. He doesn't cry. He doesn't even give a moan or a groan. Until, I'll read you the words that we say, Kishihigia lemakom tefillin, when they got to the point on his head where the tefillin sat, Savach bekol mar liyotzer nishmato, he cried out with a bitter, bitter cry to the maker of his neshama. And that's when he expired. Rav Henoch Leibowitz, who was the leader of the yeshiva of Chafetz Chaim, of the whole, if you ever heard of a Chafetz Chaim yeshiva, there's many of them around the world. He was the Rosh Yeshiva. And he asked this question. Why? Why specifically at that moment? Rabbi Yishmael had been the one who, when the decree from the tyrant was first issued, he davened and he went, so to say, up to heaven to ask permission. Is God agreeing to this? Is this going to happen? Should we fight this? And the answer he got back was, yes, this is something that needs to be. He heard the horrible news. His closest friend was killed in front of him. His skin is being peeled from upon him. No whimper, no cry, no anything, until the point of where they take away the skin off his head where the tefillin sat. Why, asked Rav Henoch Leibowitz? He said very simply, is because at that moment, the pain of the realization he could no longer fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin, that was more painful than anything else. I don't know about you guys, but I try to remind myself of this twice a year, Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. I should not take my mitzvah of tefillin so lightly. I, Baruch Hashem, I do put it on. And probably most of us here do put it on. And I'm not poo-pooing it. It's a wonderful thing. But don't undervalue what that means. Wow. To wear tefillin. Tefillin that contain the name of Hashem in different parts of the tefillin. We wrap it on our arms like an umbilical cord that connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we put it around our fingers, we utter the same words we do when we are engaged and marry a woman. Ve'erastich li la'olam. I will be betrothed to you forever, Hashem, says to the Jewish people. How many of us have that opportunity? We get this opportunity 6 days a week unless there's a yontif. Wow. Don't undervalue it and say, well, okay, whatever. I did it 3 times this week. I'm not poo-pooing it. That's great. But don't be so thrilled. You got another opportunity. Grab it. It's worth more than you can imagine. Perhaps this is something that also I came across years ago when I was in the Kollel and had a very big impact on me. It really did. We say it mostly on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur time. When we do slichos and we give ourselves a whole bunch of claps, a bunch of hits across the chest, and we say all these, that we did this wrong and we did that wrong, and we go through the whole Aleph phase, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, right? We go through all of them, Aleph through Taf. Then comes one sentence that, again, if you don't take the time to realize it, you're missing an amazing insight. We say to Hashem, Sarnu mi mitzvotecha, we have turned away from your mitzvos, umi mishpatecha hatovim, and from your good laws, velo shavalanu. I'll translate them first literally, velo shavalanu, and what was it worth to us? We went ahead and we turned away from your mitzvos and we did things we weren't supposed to. And at the end, what did I gain from it? What was the big whoop, you know? So I went ahead and I, you know, as a kid, I probably shouldn't say this, whatever. As a kid, I skipped out, you know, on Minyan. I skipped out. I didn't tell my parents and I played hooky and, you know, so of course I didn't put on tefillin because I left my tefillin in yeshiva and I went to go have a fun day. And, you know, like it's like an hour before sunset. And I'm like, oh, I didn't put on tefillin today. I'm like, so, okay. And I, of course, a million things came up and I didn't do it. And I missed that day. To this day, I remember the feeling of, I can't believe I just did that. And what did I gain? What? I played in the arcade. So, woohoo, I won a stuffed animal because I was so good at skee ball. That was my big whoop. What was it worth? I turned away from your mitzvos, velo shavalanu. What was it worth to me? I thought I gained so much. It was my best day. No, it wasn't. In the big scheme of things, I didn't gain anything. That's the simple understanding. But there's a totally different understanding. Not just it wasn't worth turning away from your mitzvos, but it's the reason why I turned and didn't do your mitzvos. You know why? Velo shavalanu, because we didn't value it. We didn't ascribe enough value to what it means to do a mitzvah. Do you know how valuable it is to put on tefillin? Do you know what it means to put on tzitzis? How hard is it? It's not hard at all. They say that the great Vilna Gaon, was crying right before he passed away. And his student asked him, Rebbe, why are you crying? And supposedly he said, because in a matter of moments, I'm going to leave this world. And no matter what I say, no matter what I do, no matter how much I offer to pay, I'll not have the opportunity to wear tzitzis again. Can you imagine? This is what the Vilna Gaon was worried about. He must have had every possible conceivable understanding of Torah. Of course he's got it good in the next world. But he says, for what? For a couple of kopecks? For a couple of dollars, I can fulfill a mitzvah that in a few moments I won't have the opportunity for anymore? Perhaps we're saying to Hashem is that we turned away from your mitzvos and all your beautiful laws because velo shavalanu, we didn't value it enough. That hurts because it's so valuable, each and every one. And this is why these men who came to Moshe and Aaron, they said, why should we lose the opportunity? Yes, we have an exemption. We don't have to bring the Karban Pesach this year. We're legitimately excused, but we don't want to miss the opportunity because we know how valuable it is. Folks, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to me. We don't value what it means to do one mitzvah. Before we go to bed tonight, say Shema. And if you did it last night, great. Make sure you do it again. Say Sviras HaOmer. You missed the night. Don't say with a bracha, but count anyway without a bracha. Do you know what a wonderful mitzvah that is? Tomorrow morning, you can daven, say brachos, say Shema. If you can, put on tefillin. Get a pair of good new tzitzis. Hold yourself back from Lashon Hara. You know how valuable every single one of these are? It's incalculable. I don't even know if there is such a word, but you can't calculate it. It's so massively valuable. And we learn it from this story of Pesach Sheni. They wanted it. Hashem didn't teach it from the outset because it wouldn't mean anything. Oh, and if you happen to be not available, then you can do it next time. You'll just make a note of it. But these men said, I want it. Hashem says, you want it? Yeah. You desire it? I'm going to give you the opportunity.
Huh?
I'm going to give you that
chance.
You can achieve anything and everything if you want it bad enough. That's the honest truth.
Not that many people.
I wish, right? The old famous, right? I wish I could have been part of that. Or I wish I would have been only. Don't live that way. Grab the opportunities. Those are the ones that we have to look for. Because they really, it is so, so valuable. Let me read you one more. One more. I'm on a roll. The Gemara tells the following. The Gemara relates that on the day of the funeral of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Judah the prince, who was the famous for the one who put together the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, on the day of his funeral, there was a divine voice that emerged and said, whoever was present at the funeral of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is destined for the life in the world to come. There was a certain dry cleaner, they call it a launderer, who would come before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi every day. On that particular day, he did not come. And therefore, obviously, he was not present at the funeral. When he heard that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had died, he was so full of grief that he went up to the roof and he fell to the ground and died. A divine voice emerged and said, that launderer too is destined for the life in the world to come. Very difficult Gemara. I don't think it means he committed suicide because that you don't get the world to come for. But it means he was so grief-stricken by missing it that he was so distraught that he lost himself and he died. He fell and he died. He was so overcome with grief that he missed an opportunity to be part of a Kiddush Hashem like that, where there was an outpouring of prayers en masse to save Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He missed it. The distress of, oh, if only I could have been a part of that, was so real to him. Gentlemen, we are fortunate that, first of all, we have the opportunity again to be back in shul. It wasn't that long ago we were not given that opportunity. Let's seize the opportunity. Go to shul. Yeah, the weather's getting warmer. It's going to be a harder schlep. You're going to have to bring a second shirt, except for Eric, who lives closer now, right? And okay, fine. But do it. It's an opportunity. 20 years from now, who knows if we're going to have that opportunity? 10 years. They tell a crazy story. You know, in the old days, they used to have a magid, an itinerant preacher who would go from town to town. And he would try to give the Jewish people, the community, the inspiration. Especially, he would talk to the rabbi ahead of time. And he would say, what kind of areas are they lax in? And how can I, you know, try to encourage them? So they tell a story that the magid comes to a particular town. And they were very lax about performance of mitzvos in general. So he gets up there Shabbos morning, and of course the place is packed because, you know, guest speaker has arrived. It's almost like nowadays a scholar in residence. Anything that's outside of 20 miles from where you live is a scholar in residence, and everybody comes to hear him. So the guy gets up there, and he's screaming fire and brimstone. He says, imagine for a minute that you died. And you get up to heaven and God says, listen, you're 50-50. You're right on the line. You got 50 credits and 50 demerits. You're right there. I'm going to give you 30 minutes back down. I'm going to let you go back down for 30 minutes exactly, right, to determine your fate. What would you do, said the Magid? The Maggid says, of course, everybody who was in that situation, this one who was very keen on chesed would go and do chesed for somebody. And this one who's very into tzedakah would go give tzedakah. And this one would run to the Beis Medrash and the Kollel and he would learn Torah. And everybody, for 30 minutes, they would do this. And everybody's shaking their heads. Okay, I got it. And he slams the table and he says, this is what we would do. So if we had more time, why are we not doing it? And everybody's shaking their head. I get it. I get it. And he slams the bima one more time and he says, and who told you you even have 30 minutes? Don't waste the opportunity. Seize it. Doing mitzvos is not just an obligation. It is. But it's an opportunity to seize these opportunities and not to have to look back on it and say, v'lo shavalanu. It wasn't worth it. So what did I do? I chased after this material well-being and I chased after this fun and this pleasure and at the cost of not doing a mitzvah? For a couple of bucks, I didn't put on a proper mezuzah? Really? Was it really worth it? We shouldn't be in that position. When Pesach Sheni rolls around, I remind myself of this story. How much do you really want it? The answer should be whatever it takes. These are opportunities. It's practical. It really, really is. We have opportunities that we are presented with. It's not a paid endorsement, but you are all blessed to be in a city where there is a vibrant Jewish community that offers you opportunities to be more and more involved with learning, with growing, with davening, with chesed. Seize these opportunities. Show Hashem how much you value it, how much it means to you. It's a lesson we can learn. Our kids can learn from us. Our families can learn from us. We could be the role models that sets them going. It's never too late. Seize these opportunities. To me, that is the most important lesson of Pesach Sheni. Any questions on that?
I do have a question on Pesach Sheni.
Yes.
That this was the first Pesach Sheni, correct? And then my understanding, well, the first Pesach Sheni after the first year that we left Egypt was,
yes,
was the first Pesach Sheni, correct?
Correct. 1 month later.
Correct. But then what was the reason that we didn't do it again for the 38 or 40 years that we were in the wilderness, and maybe, now we do it.
Who says it wasn't done?
I thought I
did. In general, the Karban Pesach, in general.
Pesach Sheni.
Well, it was only if it's necessary. It's not a must. It's only if a person, through no fault of their own, is tameh because of a mitzvah, or they're traveling and they couldn't get back in time, then Pesach Sheni kicks in. But it's okay, not just so, I sat around and I futzed around and I didn't do Pesach Rishon. Okay, I'll grab Pesach Sheni. That you don't get the opportunity. You have to have a legitimate excuse why you missed it the first round.
But so then nobody missed it until we went into the land of Israel. I thought I was taught somewhere that it never happened again till after we got into the Eretz Yisrael.
It very well could be. First of all, nobody was traveling because we were all together in the desert. So it wasn't like some guy was off, on a business trip to Africa. So as far as being Tameh, I guess not. I mean, it's only employed when it's an if then. But it's not a given. In fact, the Torah goes out of the way to say that if you were not Tameh and you were not on the road and you didn't bring the Karban Pesach, you're in deep, you know what. Not only don't you get a Pesach Sheni, you're in deep Gahak Tzaras for missing Pesach Rishon.
Rabbi, if they were Tameh for carrying Joseph's coffin and then they settled for 38 years and didn't have to carry it,
that could be. Very well could be. That's why it wasn't necessary for the remainder of the years. Correct.
Sheni.
When?
What does anybody do on Pesach Sheni?
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Eat a piece of matzah.
I was at a Pesach Sheni celebration cookout today, a barbecue.
Did they have matzah?
Yeah, shmura matzah from Lakewood.
I save one piece of shmura matzah from my Seder. I save it for today.
Yeah. Are we supposed to eat it if we didn't miss the first Pesach?
Yeah. It's a celebration of what the Yontif stands for. Even if I was able to bring it, it's still on the calendar. It's known as Pesach Sheni for those who needed the opportunity.
Is that an easy mitzvah?
It's not a biblical mitzvah. No. No.
We say bracha?
I make hamotzi, yeah. It's a piece of matzah. I don't make an al achilat matzah. I don't make a special like I do for the Seder. The only, again, it's a custom of how to celebrate Pesach Sheni. But it's, you know, it's no different than Shushan Purim here in the States. Shushan Purim is not for us. Shushan Purim is for Yerushalayim, right? That's the 15th of Adar. We don't celebrate it. But because it's being celebrated by Jews who it pertains to, it's a yunta for everybody. Same here. Pesach Sheni for those who it's applicable to, all the Jewish people celebrate it by eating a piece of matzah.
So we don't have the Karban Pesach today. What do we have instead?
You got my beautiful face. What do you mean? What do we have?
What is it? Davening? What do we do for Karban Pesach?
Are you talking about for the real Pesach?
Yeah. What is there? There's no
you
more.
You have a Seder. You have a shank bone. You have an egg.
There's no karbanos, no karban Pesach.
Nope.
So is there anything?
Nothing. I can't bring it. I'm not allowed. In fact, I'll just tell you, we're so careful that we don't even give a hint to eating something that might be construed as the karban Pesach. You're not allowed to eat roasted meat at the Seder. You're not allowed to eat roasted meat. Because it might be construed as the Karban Pesach, which obviously it can't be at this point. The only roasted you have is the one on the Seder plate, the Zeruah, but you don't eat it.
So let's say you miss Pesach Rishon because of some, you know, permissible halachic reason. You just missed it entirely. You didn't even have Seder. So on Pesach Sheni, are you supposed to conduct an entire Seder or just eat matzah?
You can't. Nowadays, you can't. There's nothing more to do.
Just eat matzah.
It's only the Karban Pesach. If a person missed, even in the times when we had a Beis HaMikdash, if a person missed Pesach Rishon, he didn't have four cups of wine. He just had the Karban Pesach. Maybe he would have it with matzah and maror, maybe. I'd have to look back again. But it's not a full Seder.
So we don't say Tachnun because it's sort of like a mini holiday?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Are we supposed to say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut?
What does that got to do with the price of tea in China?
Just looking for your opinion.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. What?
You said it at Bet Jacob. Of course, the rabbi was
beautiful. Say it. I got no issue. Say it. I'm a big fan of Hallel.
Should we say Hallel on Pesach Sheni?
No. No, not required. No. I'm telling you, nowadays, the only recognition of it is you eat a piece of matzah. That's it. I jokingly, when I started eating my matzah, I started leaning to my left in front of the kids and they started laughing.
Can you cut your hair on Pesach?
Nope. It's still svira. What are you driving? Again, you sound like the guy I started with the top. Can I find another exemption? Rabbi, how do I get out of this? Can you find me a heter for that? I mean, come on, Eric.
Oh, we cut our hair on Rosh Chodesh. We can cut our hair on
Four more days. Dude, 4 more days.
I don't need a haircut. I cut it on
Lag BaOmer is Thursday. Hang in there.
That's right.
Cut your hair on Lag BaOmer.
Are you having a bonfire? Are you having a party? Sure you are. At the camp?
No.
You can make a bonfire there.
We can, but I won't be there. Huh?
How far do you live from the camp?
An hour.
But you sleep there in the summer, right?
No. I come home every night. You can, it's a day camp. It's a day camp. We go back and forth.
Yeah, that's a schlep. You drive it, right? You don't take. There's no train to go there, is there? Or your scooter. Red's a scooter.
That's it. I got my Lime scooter. I go 55. Yep, up there. I'm on Route 70.
Shenandoah Valley.
Unbelievable. You guys are all welcome. I don't know if you're, what your plans are for the summer. If you're ever heading east anytime for those 7 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever, let me know. You'll come see the camp. I would love to show it to you firsthand.
Where's it at? In New York or in Maryland?
In Maryland. If you're in the Baltimore, Washington area, let me know.
So it's not, there's no overnight there.
I mean, we do Shabbatones. We do Shabbatones to make it, but it's not every night. It's not like they come at the beginning of the session and they stay for 4 weeks and then they go home. It's every night, in and out, except for the Shabbatones, really.
And the participant also drives sometime an hour, or they're closer?
We have buses. We have buses and vans that take everybody.
I'll get you.
Yeah. Unless you live close enough and then you do your own transportation.
How many acres you have?
107.
Oh.
Big place.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It really, really is.
It's on a pond, on a water area.
So, I mean, there is a creek, as they call it in Frederick, a creek.
Hello.
But no, we don't have a lake yet. We talk about it, but it's on the drawings from when we did the site plan, but we haven't done it yet. Mm. Not yet, but it has all the fields and the community center and the challenge course and zip lines and you name it. It's there. Pool and archery and mini golf, frisbee golf and basketball, soccer, you name it. It's all there. It's all there. How do you think I stay so young? Yeah, sitting in my office, making sure everything's running right. I don't run after these kids anymore. That's the head counselor's problem.
Before I forget, we were talking at the beginning, Rabbi is out of town in 2 weeks. So we will not be meeting in 2 weeks, but we'll meet again, I think, June 12th. Or
correct. We'll do one last one on June 12th. That'll be the last one before I got to pack it up for the summer. All right. But I'm going to be gone Memorial Day weekend. I have a cousin's wedding that I'll be out of town for. All right.
Okay.
Yes. See, Rick, I got invited to one wedding. See?
All right.
It had to be a cousin. He had to invite me.
Where's the wedding?
Florida.
Oh.
Down in Florida.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you in a few.
Bye, Ron.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.